Welcome, Jamie Taylor.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Welcome back to the audience and our listeners, as I am in loose sequence speaking to experts of the healthcare environment and industry from the five P's around what does value mean to them, to us, and how can we foster even more value creation in the environment. As a reminder, the five P's, I refer to the patient in the center, but also the providers, of course, pharmaceutical industry, payers, and policymakers. And it is my distinct pleasure today to really host an expert with Jamie Taylor, who has seen almost all of the 5P perspectives, but certainly many more than two or three. Particularly, she has worked on solutions in the public sector, has worked with and gotten insights from US FDA, but also payers' perspectives, and is also really a deep, knowledgeable person when it comes to pharmaceutical industry and create public-private partnerships from that perspective. She has held senior positions at renowned companies like Janssen J&J, and today is the Vice President for Corporate Affairs at Protagonist Therapeutics. So she also brings a very nice lens from small organizations and large organizations. And so with this, I'll kick it off right away. Jamie, what does value mean to you for healthcare?
To me, as an industry, we create value where we relieve suffering. It's that simple.
Love it. So we can potentially pause and close the session today, but I think we want to dig a little bit deeper on how we get there, because I think we all know there's a ton of stumbling blocks on generating that value and to relieve consistently pain and suffering to people. So can you tell us a little bit out of your experience working on around, let's say, those stumbling blocks of complexity in healthcare, anything that comes to your mind that you want to share from your own experience where working both with public partners and private partners, you worked on projects that could give an example how down the line that suffering can be relieved?
Sure, happy to. This is where I've situated the bulk of my career, at this intersection of public sector and private sector. Healthcare is intrinsically multi-sectoral. It requires multiple hands, multiple lenses, multiple streams of resources. And we as an industry and as individual companies within the industry simply don't have all of the tools within our arsenal to be able to carry out all of the and create all of the value that we're seeking in any particular context. Hence the value of partnerships, of establishing those partnerships, of creating partnerships that allow us to do more and achieve more in the interest of common good.
And can you give us an example, like in real life, in one of your jobs, let's say in the pharmaceutical industry, one of those limitations that I guess people can relate to, and how would you, did you have an example how you overcame those limitations?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll share one of my favorite examples of a public-private partnership that just worked beautifully. And I'll describe how and why. And this is the Janssen USAID partnership for the global distribution of a drug called Certuro. It's for multi-drug resistant tuberculosis, or MDR-TB. And this was a partnership established in part because of constraints that were shared explicitly as the driver of this partnership. MDR-TB, as many of you listening may know, is a terrible disease. Prior to Certuro's entry to the market, it was almost definitely fatal for anyone who was diagnosed with it. And unfortunately, MDR-TB was found mainly in pockets of the world where we, as a company, just did not have a footprint. We had constraints driven by learning curve, lack of infrastructure, lack of headcount, lack of customer understanding. There were just aspects that came into view for us that we knew we could not traverse without a partner. USAID had had a longstanding position of leadership in the world around tuberculosis control. USAID had offices in all of those far-flung places where we saw the opportunity to distribute the drug. And USAID had a position of expertise that they could transfer to us as we gained our footing in this particular therapeutic area, which again presented a major learning curve. And so as we look to establish this partnership, we undertook what I called an upfront illumination exercise, where we looked hard at these constraints and were very clear about them. You might call it candor around constraint, and really consider it a best practice in the establishment of any sort of public-private partnership. It's interesting as an industry partner to come with that kind of self-reflection, to very clearly explain the limits that you have. It's not something that we're accustomed to be doing in a sort of a public sort of context. And these constraints ultimately come to light in the design of a partnership. And so it's important to be mindful of that. But this clarity that we brought to the conversation with USAID, and frankly, the sheer humility of it as we approach them, really set us in a place that I think set us on a course to success over the long term. Yeah. So it was interesting because our own expression of constraint, particularly around this footprint issue, what it did was open up a dialogue with USAID about their own constraints. And what we could do was integrate those constraints into the structure and design of the partnership and figure out where additional gaps may lie so that they wouldn't come up as a kind of a surprise or a perilous surprise as we began execution. Again, we were clear about our limits in certain markets and our limits of understanding. They were clear with us around the political environment that they were in, which was very intriguing. There were certain parts of the world that had high MDR-TB rates, North Korea in particular, where mm-hmm. USAID, because of geopolitical tensions, mm-hmm. would not be able to establish an access and distribution component of the partnership. So they were clear about these pockets of the world that presented certain tensions for the US government. Some of them would impose risks of danger to staff, which then would push us as J&J to look for other solutions. In this case, we found partners in the social sector to fill those gaps so that we could truly achieve that sort of global distribution and access for Certuro as we envisioned it. We also talked about just the risks associated with the fact that we were in a business which has its own risks and uncertainties. When we think about time horizon, they were looking ahead at a next US presidential election, an inevitable change of leadership at that point with Obama being in his second term, and shifting priorities that might occur. So we went ahead and built that constraint into the structure of the partnership. We set a deadline for execution, a definitive duration for the partnership. And it was interesting because that actually prompted, as we went public with the partnership, as we announced it, that prompted quite a bit of criticism. You know, certainly MDR-TB doesn't have its own time limits, but the partnership for practical purposes, recognizing these constraints, recognizing that at the very least, we'd need some sort of time horizon to put a gut check on the partnership to assess our own success. And we also needed a sense of urgency, quite frankly. Yeah. We knew that if we said 3 to 5 years, then there'd be, you know, boots on the ground and wheels turning in a way where if we hadn't set that time limit, we wouldn't have experienced. And so sharing those mutual constraints really put us in a position to succeed. And that actually led us through the discussion on constraints to, I think, what was the most interesting piece, and that was aligning around priorities. We knew we would be criticized for placing this time limit on the partnership, but we said, good press is not our first priority. And we were explicit about that when we discussed shared vision. We said, our number one priority here is saving lives. Of working with that sense of urgency against that top priority. Our second priority was fidelity to the partnership. We would build trust, we would be loyal to each other and express that loyalty in our actions through the way we communicated, through the way we comported ourselves when we were in the same room and when we weren't in the same room, when we were behind a joint microphone or sending out a joint press release and when we were separate. That we would carry out the fidelity to the partnership and have a commitment to the health of the partnership. And then the publicity and reputation piece, it was important, but at the same time, it wasn't overwhelming. In fact, we placed it in a second tier. Right?
It comes exactly with the success of the project. No, I love it. So thank you for sharing this. And I think really kind of this interest piece to be very clear and open and sharing with the partners and listening, but also I love your operational focus and say, you know, let's have deadlines, let's have commitments on what actually the priorities are. So I'm sure in your vast pocket and basket of experiences, can you share an experience on where maybe the limitations were so strong that it was hard to overcome them. Or let's another word, sometimes we learn best from things that haven't worked quite well. So do you have any learnings to share here for audience and myself, frankly, what we can learn from those experiences you had where it wasn't as successful in the beginning, let's say?
No, I love that you said in the beginning, because that's really where those seeds of success or failure are planted. And there's one partnership in particular that still generates quite a bit of pain. And it's one that I reflect on often, and I think carry a lot of personal accountability for when it comes to how that partnership unfolded. And it really comes down to that initial stage. I mentioned it in the prior example, which again was very successful because of that pre-work. But the success, or the, I should say the failure of this partnership really stemmed from, let's call it the pre-work. When we're working with external stakeholders, there's relationships and best practices and relationship building that occur, but there's also other stakeholders that we work with in our companies, in our industry. And in this case, I had not secured the internal buy-in of our team. I was very passionate about this partnership. It had a pediatric component that really drove that sort of mission-sided part of me. I championed and in some ways bulldozed this partnership forward. And the expectation of the external party was a substantial financial contribution from our company, which is kind of par for the course, as you might imagine. It's something to be negotiated in every context. We're always trying to teach as industry players multidimensional partnership, you know, beyond that sort of ATM one-dimensional expectation. But in this case, that this partnership included that financial contribution. There was an internal team that was seeking to expand significantly its headcount. And this partnership and the financial contribution came head to head and really came to blows with their desire to expand their team. And ultimately, through some working of upper ranks, I was able to secure the financial contribution for this partnership to go and lead and execute it. But it created a huge amount of bitterness among this segment of the team internally. And not only did I not win their buy-in, I won their opposition to the partnership. And so every aspect of the partnership, as we were setting it up and began to execute it, it was fraught with this sort of peanut gallery effect, where internally I was getting a lot of heat. For example, we set up a joint flight of our leadership with this partner's leadership, and the partner bought all first class seats for its team on this flight. And that alone triggered a huge amount of criticism about waste of resources and so forth. And it became unbearable for me internally. And in turn, I think failing to exercise the self-awareness and responsibility that I bore for this dynamic, I cascaded that sense of frustration onto the partner. And my response was to, in my leadership and responsibility for the success of this partnership, to micromanage. I literally moved in next and literally relocated and moved next to the person on the other side who was leading this partnership. I peered over their shoulders. I begged and pleaded for them to communicate more. I showed up at their office constantly, again, attempting to manage internal stakeholders, but creating a lot of that sort of bitterness and resentment on the other side, where they didn't have a full view into some of the career capital constraints that I was facing, that were, you know, and that personal constraint and that level of criticism internally around the partnership itself, it just became damning in its own right. And so ultimately, that it was a partnership that fizzled by necessity, or by, I should say, by kind of the claws and the jaws of internal stakeholders who are not supportive.
Yeah. And I think, number one, thank you so much for sharing your very frank, you know, how you lived it, and also kind of acknowledging it's not always about, as you said, success in the press, but it's also kind of really looking back, being self-critical to yourself, but also to the team. So I think this is very valuable insights and very personal insights. I really thank you for the trust here to share it and to demonstrate how the complexity in healthcare needs to be dealt with, not only multidimensional alignment externally, but also, as you say, our internal teams, the people that work with us hand in glove day to day. We should not forget them around us and seek alignment before we go, or in parallel as we go external. I think this is a super reminder. So before we close out in a couple of minutes, is there anything else around that complexity and some of those examples that you shared from public-private partnerships that can solve and remediate for some of this complexity on the way to relieve suffering and generate value? Anything else you want to share before we close for today?
Absolutely. I'll say that even where you face those roadblocks or obstacles in a partnership, just as I had done in that second example, I realized through the context of other partnerships established that those complexities are inevitable, and there's always the opportunity for redemption. Look for the rescue. Look for the solution. In one case, we had been part of what I call a forced partnership in the sense that there was a very high profile event that was conducive to sort of ribbon cutting and confetti throwing. And there was a lot of kind of friendly pressure on different actors to establish and announce partnerships there. So we had a rapid fire sort of, you know, MOA set up with a particular government entity around a really noble cause. But we realized shortly after all of the confetti had landed on the ground that we really didn't have a plan and we really didn't know each other as partners. And we attempted to begin getting the wheels of execution moving before we had done this pre-work again. And so we started on a very weak footing, despite, you know, all of the, you know, the hugs and kisses and arms raised in the air in the course of the announcement. We ultimately brought in what I call a rescue team because we had fissures and lack of trust that we needed to manage, but we as a company probably weren't the best positioned to drive the bridge building. We needed a third party to come in. We brought in some of the best. Matthew Thomas, for example, who co-wrote the classic HBR article around multi-sectoral leadership, the tri-sector athlete notion. He's a real expert there. We brought in the Intersector Project and Neil Brito, who led it at the time. It's now hosted by the Aspen Institute. And they brought in tools and methods and checklists and all kinds of best practices. They interviewed each of us. They built bridges. They mapped out the gaps and the points of opportunity. It changed everything. So know that you can call upon a rescue team. There are experts out there that can really drive that silo busting, you know, just to use a colloquial term, and more nobly build those bridges that can create durable partnerships that make a big difference.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Jamie Taylor.
Thank you.